Hello, I'm Rhea Blakey for Discovery Health. Our topic today is the diagnosis and treatment of hypoactive sexual desire disorder in women. I'd like to thank the University of Virginia School of Medicine for accrediting the program. I'd also like to thank Boehringer Ingelheim Pharmaceuticals for providing the educational grant to make this program possible. Physicians and other healthcare professionals can earn free CME credit by registering online at discoveryhealthcme.com and taking the post test. All the graphics and references from today's program will also be available online. It's easy to log on, take the post test, and earn free credit for the program, so do it today. We're fortunate to have a distinguished group of experts in our studio today to discuss talking with patients about sexual desire disorders, to review the evidence for treatment, and to share their advice. Dr. Alan Altman, Assistant Clinical Professor of Obstetrics, Gynecology, and Reproductive Biology, Harvard Medical School, Boston, Massachusetts. Dr. Barbara Levy, Medical Director, Women's Health and Breast Center, Franciscan Health System, Federal Way, Washington. And Dr. Anita Clayton, David C. Wilson Professor, Department of Psychiatry and Neurobehavioral Sciences, Professor of Clinical Obstetrics and Gynecology, University of Virginia School of Medicine, Charlottesville, Virginia. Thank you all for joining us today. During the next hour, we will discuss the definition of female hypoactive sexual desire disorder, potential underlying causes of HSDD, including physical and psychological issues, ways to improve sexual history-taking skills and help women feel more comfortable discussing sexual problems, and specific treatments for sexual dysfunction related to the physical changes of menopause. Dr. Clayton, let's start with a definition. What is hypoactive sexual desire disorder? Is there a specific definition?
The DSM-IV defines hypoactive sexual desire disorder, or HSDD, as persistent or recurrent, absent or deficient thoughts, fantasies, or desire for sex that causes marked distress or interpersonal conflict. What this really means is we have to take into account context because, for example, a difference in libido between partners isn't necessarily HSDD. Just like if desire is decreased because of interpersonal conflict, that's not it either.
From a clinical standpoint, it's much more confusing because patients will come in and they say, I have low libido, I have no sex drive. And it's our job really to sort through whether the patient fits into this HSDD category or whether she has a hormonal problem, a physical problem, a drug disorder, depression, a physical complaint, pain, that could be contributing to her lack of libido. So that it's a very complex issue. Women are not quite so simple.
And I think the important issue is also a change from what has been going on before. A patient will come in and notice that this is different from the way it used to be. But throughout all of it, the key has to do with distress. Is it causing personal or partner distress?
Absolutely.
So how common is the disorder? How many women have HSDD?
It's actually very common, at least at some point in women's lives. So we have some data that shows up to maybe even 50% of women will have distress and concern about sexual dysfunction at some point in our lives. Now, that doesn't mean throughout our lives. But there are things that happen to us physically, emotionally, psychologically, as our roles change in life, that can become distressful at times.
There are also a number of studies trying to look at low sexual desire and low sexual desire associated with distress. And there are a variety of methodologies used to evaluate this, but they come up with similar numbers. About 42% of women will report low desire at some point in their life. But less than 10% of women will actually report low desire plus distress. Also looking at the other sexual disorders, because there can be overlap, about 5% of women report female sexual arousal disorder, with about 4.5% reporting female orgasmic disorder. And less than 2% of women complain of all three of those problems. So it's important to look at the overlap.
And there's much more problems now with sexual desire than there was 20, 30 years ago because we've opened the closet. People are talking about it. It's become everyday talk shows and magazines. And this helps bring patients into our offices ready to discuss this kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't think there's more disorder. I think we hear about it more.
Absolutely.
And women are more distressed. So in the sense that the bother and distress is part of the definition, I think it is more common because we've added that ability to discuss it and express women's concern.
Still, I would imagine it could be a challenging subject matter to approach in a clinical setting, and physicians are not always comfortable addressing it, as are the patients. Should physicians wait for women to bring up issues about sexual concerns, or should they ask?
Well, certainly I would recommend that it's very important to bring it up and to ask. Are you sexually active is a question I ask to patients on a regular basis. It's part of the regular history. I tend to specialize more in that, but still, it has to be part of the regular history. And there are a number of reasons why clinicians don't generally ask that. Number one, the clinician can be uncomfortable with their level of information and their ability to answer a question once the topic is brought up. The second problem has to do with a time factor. We don't have the time and the ability to say, okay, I'm going to ask you this question knowing full well that it's going to take 45 minutes for you to discuss it and bring out all your concerns, and I cannot afford that time in many ways.
Alan, the way I get around that is that I use a questionnaire for patients who are coming in for their annual Well Woman exam. So it's not every patient who walks in the office, but at least once a year, I have generated a very short questionnaire, but they're all of the issues now that we're required to ask about. Drug abuse, physical and violent sexual abuse. We're supposed to screen people for depression. In the primary care setting, that becomes very difficult. You can't download everybody's questionnaire. So I've put together just 12 questions, and they're sometimes it's a problem, it's always a problem, or it's never a problem for me. And the patient just has to check it off. What that does is it allows me, before I walk in the room, to know, aha, this is an issue for this patient. And it allows her to tell me about an issue that may be very difficult for her to bring up. I think that's true of incontinence. I think it's true of sexual dysfunction. And what really bothers me as a primary care physician is when I've gotten through the entire visit, and as my hand is on the door and I'm ready to leave, that's when she says, oh, by the way, doctor, I don't have any sex drive. That's when the time commitment is such a problem. And the solution to that, I think, is not that difficult. You say, gosh, that's a really important issue, and it deserves an appointment. Let's finish up your physical exam, finish up your Well Woman exam, and let's really devote a full appointment to discussing this issue.
I think there's another way to deal with that, too, which is sort of anticipate that that may happen, so that if the physician brings up the issue of sexual activity and problems with desire, arousal, orgasm, pain, and then also are they bothered by that? If you do that longitudinally, if you do that at your routine visits, if you quickly go through that at subsequent visits, then you can note a change, and you can note that early in the visit and give it the time that it deserves at that point.
This is really the single most important factor that I think we can get across to primary care clinicians, and that is the asking of the question in any way, shape, or form that they feel, because I tend not to use questionnaires. But in saying, are you sexually active? If she says yes, do you have any questions about your sexual activity? Real quick. If she says no, does that bother you or your partner? And that's when the discussion begins.
Another way to get at it sometimes is to ask about need for contraception. So in a certain age group of women, are you using anything for contraception? If she says no, do you need something? If she says no to that, then are you active with a male or female? And we can get into the issue of if she's not having sex, is that a concern?